Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 2:28 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is June 26th. I apologise for the somewhat late recording. I pulled a lateral dorsal muscle last night, and I was at the doctor just to have a look at it. So they've been recommending rest for me, which is a bit of a tall order. Well, when we look at copper, then we can see that it has been pulling back sharply over the last week or two, and the short-term overbought condition has been replaced by a short-term oversold condition, and now it's right at the lower side of its range. And it was a tiny bit steadier in here today, but not nearly enough to really demonstrate that demand is returning to dominance in an emphatic manner. It's right in the region of the trend mean. This is a perfect example of what we say by the region of the trend mean, because the price is now below it, but it's not so far below it that we couldn't say that that this has been a failure at this level, at least not yet. There is still potential for a bounce here, so this is a market that's worth keeping an eye on, because if it breaks lower, well, then that is going to represent a key inconsistency, most particularly when we've had three ranges, one above another, and each is relatively similar sized, both in terms of size and duration, to what we've seen previously. So that's, I think, a marker that's well worth keeping an eye on. Then you had Brent crude, and that was up over a dollar in here today, but most particularly it's following through on the upside that we saw on Friday. So now it has broken the progression of lower rally highs evident since the middle of May, and this confirms a low of at least near-term significance. And when we think about that in terms of the medium-term trend, then Brent crude had been pulling back, and it has found support above the previous peak that we saw back in January, and there is the likelihood now that the next ports or pit stop is going to be somewhere around $80, and it could quite easily cruise through that level. What I saw, I'm answering a question in here today about the yield curve spread, because it is now starting to gain wider attention. Lots of people are writing articles about it, and there's lots of people expressing opinions about it. I am particularly reminded of the conversations that people were having back in 2005 and 2006 when we were in a similar condition. And there was, I think, a rather active conversation going on about whether it was going to be a good lead indicator for a future recession on this occasion rather to the last one, because people were thinking, well, it's been a while since we've it hadn't been that long, it had only been about 5 or 6 years since we'd had the previous recession. And it is also worth highlighting that the measure, it got inverted in 1998 and then inverted again in 2000. So what people were worried about back then was commodity price inflation, the advent of China. People were saying that the Federal Reserve was only normalizing policy, that it wasn't anything particularly historic. And that is, there's some of that going on right now, because people are arguing, it's a different argument, but people are arguing that it's not going to be efficacious on this particular scenario because we've had quantitative easing. Well, there is the argument that if we just simply look at the long-term trend of U.S. interest rates in a very simple manner, they have been trending lower for an awfully long time. The last peak was just above 5%. We're currently at 1.75%. The peak prior to that was around 6.5%. There was one around 6%. And then back in 1989, we had one closer to 10%. Well, if this is still a downtrend, people are beginning to countenance the possibility that the next peak in interest rates is going to be below 5%, and that there is going to be that the next recession could potentially lead the USA into negative interest rates. That is, I think, the epitomization of the bull market hypothesis that we have in U.S. Treasury yields. When we look at the 10-year Treasury yield, we know, for example, that there is a great deal of additional supply that is going to be coming to market over the course of the next few months. And despite the fact that the yield was a little bit tighter in here today, the reality is that there is going to be a huge amount of additional supply, both for to fund the fiscal deficits that are currently being run, and also in order to roll over the existing debt that is sitting on the Fed's balance sheet, and that a great deal of which is coming for ex maturity over the next couple of years, and it's already started this year. So those are two big sources of additional new supply, and that is part of the reason why we have yields up at these levels. The Federal Reserve is rearming the interest rate weapon, and they are going to keep going. They're going to keep doing that until they get a recession. I think that is part of the reason why we get this way of thinking that the Federal Reserve generally it causes recessions. It's because they're rearming their interest rate weapon. Well, yields continue to consolidate around 3%, and in order for them to demonstrate that this really is the end of the secular bull market, then they will have to sustain a move above 3% and subsequently too. But today was the first day where we saw some weakness starting to come through, particularly from the region of the low back in December. And this is about where the dollar could be expected to begin to find support once more. There is an election coming up at the weekend, and I think it would be a very brave trader that is taking big positions ahead of the outcome of that election, where there is the real possibility you're going to get a left-wing populist being swept into power. And then when you have the outlook for Brazil, well, the Brazilian real pulled back over the last couple of weeks following that big rally that we saw at the beginning of June. And what is interesting is that interest rates in Brazil are lower than they are in Mexico right now. The Brazilian Selic rate is has been coming down. They haven't been raising interest rates. They've been cutting them over the last few years. But the economy is certainly under pressure. And I was talking with Brazilian emigres yesterday. They were talking about the fact that their family back home are not taking time off when Brazil are playing in the World Cup because they think that their businesses are under such pressure that they simply can't take a day off. Well, when Brazil can't take a day off to watch the national team play soccer, then you know that something has got to be untoward. And there are people literally speaking in the streets very vocally about the prospect of a military coup. So, what that suggests to me is that this is a pause in the Brazilian real's decline, and that there is ample potential here for a further testing of underlying trading. And the Brazilian stock market has broken down in no uncertain terms. This has got type 2 top formation characteristics. Generally speaking, after a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, what we anticipate is that there's going to be a range. That range could be anywhere from 70 to 77,000. But then, if that's what we get, there's going to be an awful lot of work that has to be done to reassert demand dominance. Much more likely is that we see a further test of underlying trading, and if we continue to see a deterioration in the real, I think that's got to be one of the more likely scenarios. Well, when we look at a big company like Vale, it's back in the region of the trend mean. It sells its iron ore in dollars, and it is consolidating earnings in real, so the share is now right back in the region of the trend mean. Then, when we look at something like BHP Billiton, it's unwinding its overbought condition relative to the trend mean, and we saw some just very nascent evidence of support starting to come back in here today, and the same thing with Rio Tinto. Well, what I think is important is that. What is the likely outcome of China? What is China likely to do in the event of an escalation of trade friction? Well, they're already devaluing the currency, and the dollar is now breaking higher in a dynamic manner against the renminbi. So, and there's no sign yet that that's over. Well, the banking sector is suffering from that, but if what that suggests is that China is deliberately trying to make its exports more competitive, and that if it wants to support the domestic market, well, the primary tool they've used to do that is building over the course of the last decade. And if that is indeed the case, well, we could expect industrial resources to do better from that. So we are at a rather pivotal event right now, and I think that it is China and Europe are where the epicenter of risk is, and that probably another a number of other emerging markets are likely to be caught in the crossfire. And when, for example, if we look at the Indonesian market, it has pulled back sharply over the course of the last week. That's confirmed resistance in the region of the trend mean. And the Malaysian market is breaking down in a rather dynamic manner now, and has also broken its progression of higher reaction lows. Singapore is far from an emerging market, but the reality is it has also broken its progression of higher reaction lows. So we can see that a number of other Asian markets are being caught in the crossfire of this trade war, and they have been sort of treading water between or trying to play one play the US off against China, and that does not appear to be working very well right now. The Philippines has pulled back more than most, and the Thai market, sorry, I haven't typed that very well, the Thai index has also broken down in here. So we're seeing pretty broad-based deterioration in markets outside of the USA. And there is the potential that if we do in fact get some contraction in some of these economies, that it could have a loop-back effect onto everything else. We've for the longest time talked about the Wall Street leash effect, but the majority of growth in the world is happening in the emerging markets these days, and if they go through a more difficult period of time, well, then that could have a loop-back effect for everywhere else. So they are worth keeping an eye on. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.